How is everyone doing today? This is going to be episode 30 of Sit Down with Sniper. I've been really excited to bring on more and more people as we've continued for now over half a year. And today we've brought on someone who is super talented, someone who's been around multiple places. And well, let's get right into it. Brian, how you doing today, man?
Hey, Sniper. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man. I appreciate it. So for those that don't know, today we got on Brian Brinkman. We're going to dive into the things that he's done, not only with NFTs, but as an artist, a designer, and just overall what he thinks of the space. And of course, we got the five questions at the end. So, Brian, we're going to jump right in. Yeah, man, I got some things lined up for you.
Cool.
So what we know that you're an artist, animator, designer, but for those that don't know, when did this all start for you? Did you start when you were young? Teenager? Was it just something you recently picked up?
Yeah, I would say teenager. I think it was early high school. I started making content for websites like Newgrounds, which was like an early Flash cartoon website. From that, I kind of got hooked on this idea of putting out content and getting comments and reactions. This is all like pre-YouTube world, but it was that same kind of idea of like, oh, this person watched this and here's what they think about it. Most of the time it was negative, but sometimes people would be encouraging and I made friends through there. And through those friends, they encouraged me to go to college for animation, which I did in Philadelphia. I went to the University of Arts for 4 years, got my bachelor's degree in traditional animation, but it had a heavy focus on experimental techniques. From there, I moved to New York City. And I worked in everything from fashion advertisement to children's commercials. I've worked on some animated television series as well. And then on the side, I was doing gallery art pieces and music videos and concert posters and anything I could to kind of continue to push the art side of my creativity while I worked in the industry. And then I eventually landed a job working at the Tonight Show, Jimmy Fallon, for 8 years, which then also became a kind of a joint job where I worked at Saturday Night Live doing visual effects for like 6 years. And then during that time, I discovered NFTs around early 2020. And then I kind of, yeah, that's the beginning of my NFT journey. So that leads me to there.
Okay. So before we jump into the NFTs, you brought up something that I thought was absolutely crazy and we can't just run by it. The fact that you have done some things for SNL and a long time at Jimmy Fallon, what was it like to be able to get the experience of working with, something that's very known and just a group of great people and then to transition into NFTs? I mean, did it help you at all working on Jimmy Fallon?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was a blast. When I started there, it was the late night with Jimmy Fallon. And so the first year I was there, I got to be a part of the revamping and transition into the Tonight Show, which was very exciting. And so we got to, you know, kind of revamp the show, make it all glitzy and gold. And what I enjoyed about that job is that working in the animation industry, I would do something like lip syncing or something where you do the same thing every day for months straight. And it's very like labor work. It's not creative. And it's not very fun, to be honest. It's cool working on those shows, but it's kind of a drag to do those kind of like labor jobs. With Fallon, every single day, the writers would come up with ideas. There'd be new stories to make jokes about. And you would just work your butt off from morning till afternoon. And then they would tape the show and then you would edit the show at night and then it would air. And then you just throw it all out the window, start fresh the next day. And so me, I have crazy ADHD. So that like hit me in a way that constantly kept me creatively challenged. And it also forced me to learn a lot of skills to do parodies, whether it's like a Schoolhouse Rock parody or a Dr. Seuss parody or, you know, whatever. I would have to change my styles to do these things. And so it was, I really enjoyed it. And I think it definitely made me a stronger artist. And now that I'm in the NFT space, you kind of see my artwork has this real mix of styles and mediums.
I think it's funny because with the SNL and the parodies, I see you tweet a lot, and a lot of your tweets are pretty funny. I find myself laughing at a lot of them. So, I mean, it really goes hand in hand, and I love it.
Yeah.
Whenever.
No, I think that definitely leads. The humor has led, it's become a part of my DNA.
I mean, we've seen on Twitter. I mean, a lot of the shit posters. People love them. You know, you got people like Greg. People
I
love
love
Greg. You
Greg,
know.
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, no, I mean, it goes hand in hand. I love following anyone that, I mean, I love the seriousness, of course, for NFTs, but man, I mean, I love to laugh. I need some comedy in my life. So, I mean, I definitely follow people like you, Greg, see the tweets, PR Guitar, I mean, just great people.
Oh yeah. No, I think that I agree, and I think there's something interesting about that I've talked about in some of my like advice for artists, which is, as much as promoting yourself as a part of the space and trying to sell your artwork, I think being an active participant in the space and elevating it in those ways of making jokes and memes and that kind of stuff. Is a great way to kind of fill that gap so you're not constantly saying, like, buy my stuff, buy my stuff. It's like making people laugh will get you way more retweets and shares than saying, buy my art, unfortunately, but that's just the truth. But those people then follow you and then they discover your art.
So how do you feel? That's actually interesting that you say that. So how do you feel whenever you see people really attach onto that with their projects? And we'll use examples like WAGDIE. I don't know how they pronounce it. WAGDIE or whatever they
Yeah, we're all
say.
gonna die. Yeah.
Them and goblins who take the memeing and the funniness and just their style of things to the next level to kind of push them aside from the regular projects, like the goblins, for example. All they do is really troll and meme, and it's been
Yeah.
very successful for them.
Yeah, no, I think that plays into a strong part of the space, which is the community side. And a lot of the space is people joining to be amongst like-minded people. And so when you can create a community that bands together in these cool ways, I mean, those that you're mentioning are right now the biggest attention grabbers of this week. But you look at the Bored Apes or the Cool Cats or, you know, any crypto dick butts. Becoming just a part of the zeitgeist of the entire community, but then having your own small community within it is such a strong thing to have. I'm often saying that like being in a PFP collection is like being in a fraternity where it's like, you know, you go into the city and you go to a Bored Apes meetup and everyone's like, hey, we're all part of this club and we're all doing this thing together and we're supporting each other. And so it's very much that kind of camaraderie that you get out of those that I think people attach to more than anything.
So whenever it comes to the profile pictures, I know that I don't believe you've made a generative project, have you?
Well, technically, yes. In January of 2021, I did an early art blocks project called Nimbuds, which was a on-chain JavaScript-based generative project. There was 400 of them. This is back before the 10K supply had become a thing, outside of, you know, CryptoPunks or whatever. But like, this is pre-Bored Apes, pre-Hash Masks, and so at the time, I think Art Blocks was like 200 editions, and I did 400, which was like a big leap forward for them. But those are generated characters that are these clouds with randomized wires, and everything about them is completely randomized and generated with code. And so we got a lot of kind of personality out of a simplistic code because it was me and my buddy Manny, who also worked at SNL at the time, built that together. And so I've dipped my toes into it. In that sense, and I got a real feel for how, as an artist, what kind of expectations come about having that high of a supply. And you can kind of see how it can be manipulated outside of your control in a way that you know, it's for better or worse, just a part of it. And so that kind of slowed me down and it made me not want to jump into like a 10K because you quickly lose control of a project that large unless you really have a strong team and plan.
So, talking about and this is why I asked if you've done generative projects, because do you feel like the ones that are around right now, the attention grabbers for the week, Do you feel like the community is going to be able to, and we're not talking any specific projects, but do you feel like the communities of those smaller projects that pop up and have a quick run, do you feel like that's around for the long term, or are you more of a community guy yourself, like the BAYC, the Cool Cats, that's where you would go? Or do you not even invest into profile pictures? You just stay with traditional art, like one of ones and whatnot?
No, I definitely play the PFP game. If I tend to gravitate towards ones that have artists at the forefront of them. So like Klon with Cool Cats or Peaceful Groupies with Jan Frula, just because I'm a believer in, you know, having artists that are creating for a project is a more long-term route. But no, I've always kind of seen them as good ways to grow value so that I can buy art from artists. Like, because in the end, I buy a lot of art from artists, but the odds of me reselling that are pretty low most of the time, because it's a long horizon and it's a riskier bet on whether an artist will continue to grow in the space and succeed in value and catch the eye of bigger collectors. So it's much easier to play the PFP game to make smaller flips. And I think what we're seeing now with these free mints, the question is how invested is the community in these projects? I think Goblins has grown to a point where I think they're a stable force. I think we are all going to die as well. But, you know, there's a lot of projects that were really strong 6 months ago that just couldn't sustain, because I think when it comes to the PFP side of the space, it's all about keeping people's attention. And you either do that by having a very interesting community to be in, or by delivering value. And so it's much harder in that sense. That's why I try to get into that as much. I think it's better to grow long-term incrementally as an artist.
I like that. I like that you're more of an art collector, not really an art trader or flipper. And I can respect that. I love art, and I find myself often like the time drop whenever they had Klon pieces and Vinnie Hager pieces. I genuinely wanted those pieces to keep. Like, I would love to print that out and or do anything I can with that piece. So I totally understand that. Transitioning into your own NFT works and your own pieces that you've done, you've made some really beautiful pieces, some amazing pieces. And I didn't know, I've seen your Nimbuds on your profile. I was unaware of the name because I did not look that deep, which is on me.
<It's okay. laughs>
But knowing that they are all generated with code is very intriguing. And I'm going to be looking at them way more after this call. But what would you say has been your favorite part of being an artist in NFTs versus being an artist at places like Fallon and just businesses like that?
Yeah. Well, even before, you know, outside of Fallon, I was doing digital art that I would print and build into like kind of 3D shadow boxes for gallery shows in LA, because for the longest time, I love making digital art, but there wasn't a path to finding financial success through it. You'd have to either make it a screen print or make it a t-shirt or do all these different things of like turning those digital pieces into something physical you could sell. So when the NFT space came, I immediately gravitated towards it because one, I could work natively in digital, and two, I could play with animation, which is something I love to do. And so I would say, you know, those aspects, joining into the space and then getting involved in like crypto voxels and then learning about voxel building and building metaverse and building sculptures for, you know, on cyber, or, you know, there's so many interesting mediums that didn't exist 4 years ago in my mind, at least, that were viable. Even generative art wasn't really a thing that was viable up until like a year ago. So it's just amazing to see all these new platforms for artists to create that can become viable career paths, which is, you know, and even if you're not an artist, this Web3 space has created so many jobs that didn't exist before. I think that's just so fascinating, and it's happening at such a rapid pace that it really anybody can get involved if they really care about the space. You can be a community mod, you could be a builder of whatever, you know, it's so open-ended, it's wonderful.
And a good thing about that is I've seen a lot of people take those opportunities of becoming a community mod and engaging with that community and then going somewhere else to build something even greater and using that mod as a stepping stone in their career. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it time and time again, people start in Web3, seen it over at Time Magazine, where people yep. start off, Timo started off in the Cool Cats. They really enjoyed his vibe and how he carried himself. So he was brought over to Time, and that was a big thing for him. And it yeah. was just the fact that he got that chance at that project over at Cool Cats. So, I mean, it has been really great. I mean, even for me doing NFTs, I get to do this podcast. You know, I never would have imagined sitting down with someone like yourself or Keith Grossman, or just having the opportunity to do this on my weekdays. So I think NFTs have opened a lot of doors for a lot of people. Going over to now, we know you've done Nimbuds, and on the prior episode, we had the worm. And for those that listen, for those yeah. that listen to that, we learned that you actually have had it, I believe, and you did one of the blessings, the first blessing.
The blessing, yes.
Yes.
I love the worm. The worm, to me, is one of the most wholesome things in the space, because there's, you know, a lot of people come at the space about money and all this other stuff. And the worm is just, it's a pure project in my mind. And so when I discovered it, I thought it was fascinating. I loved the vibe. I jumped into the Discord and everyone was really cool. And this was, I think I was like the 90th person to get it, because I found out about it and I was like, I got to get this. And so I was like, who has it? And then I DM'd that person, like, can I please have this worm? and they were like, I'll give it to you, but you have to promise to send to this next person. I was like, okay, we have an agreement here. You know, it was very like, it was a lot of backroom handshakes, but I was a man of my word. I'd give it to the next person. But then, yeah, then they reached out and they're like, hey, we want to do this thing. And again, it ties into my Nimbuds, where they said, we want to make this blessing. We'll help you make it an on-chain thing if you supply us with the SVG files, which I did. And then they added the blink animation, which is an on-chain blink, which is what the Nimbuds do as well. If you stare at the Nimbuds long enough, they'll blink. And if you click them, they're interactive and a box pops up on them as well. So I think I loved that they, instead of just sending everyone a normal like JPEG NFT, that team really went the extra step and built an on-chain SVG NFT that will live forever, which plays into the lore of the worm.
The worm, whenever I first learned about the worm, I was the same way. I was like, I have to get this thing. And right now, I can work a deal to get it and pass it to the next person, but I'm really interested in breaking the single day record of how many people can get it. I wanted to get a DM together of about 100 people and be like, look, if we set aside time on one day, if we could get this worm and just transfer it back and forth to each other, not only would we set a record, it would be pretty big. It'd be like something in the NFT space, a little milestone. and I have a lot of friends that are down for it, but I don't know how many people are going to be willing to pass it off to 100 people for a quick run, but we're trying.
I don't know. I hope so. I know they were hoping to get to 1,000 by NFT NYC. I don't know how close they are, but I think it always goes into someone's wallet and they're sleeping and sits there for 8 hours. It's really hard.
I know. It gets me so irritated because I want it so bad. I messaged the person yesterday who had it and they were like, oh, I actually just transferred it. And I was like, What a coincidence.
If anybody has it for like more than 5 days, I'll put them on blast on Twitter. And I'm like, what the heck?
Hey, what are you doing, man? You got to get up the worm, man. You got to give them up.
Yeah.
So have you done, we know you've done the blessings, the Nimbuds. What else have you done in NFTs? Any other collections? One of ones, worked with any other artists?
Oh yeah. So many. I think at this point I've put out maybe 140 pieces of art. But I think I'm at like 38 super rare one of ones. I just put out a new piece that'll be showing at the super rare gallery during NFT NYC. I have done three or four full collections on NFT Gateway, which are like, you know, group pieces of like five to seven pieces. And then I've also done a bunch of collaborations on NFT Gateway. I have a drop next week on June 15th, that'll be a collector's only, first come, first serve, affordable piece. And so I'm always kind of doing little things like that. I just did a drop on Artifex, which is Artifex, which is a collection of, it's going to be 100 of these kind of OG artists put out one of ones plus sets of these GLB sculptures that can be put into metaverses. And so they all, I also got to build like an Unreal Engine experience with them. That was awesome. If anybody's going to NFT NYC, if, I don't know if this will air before or this might air after, who knows, but there'll be, that'll tie into this thing called NFTC that's going on. And so, yeah, I'm constantly putting out little things here and there. I try to limit myself supply wise, but I try to diversify and do collaborations as much as possible. I've done probably a dozen or so collaborations in the last year, with other artists. So I'm always a big fan of that, and especially kind of uplifting others in that way.
So now I'm dying to ask you the question, is there anyone that you're wanting to work with and you either haven't gotten the time, y'all are both busy, or just haven't gotten around to asking? There's a lot of, like, for me, there's a lot of people I would love to have on this podcast. You were one of them, so I was super excited. But but as an artist like yourself, I was just curious. Yeah, is there anybody?
That's a good question. I mean, the two people that came before me in the space that I admire their styles and their colors would be XCopy and Killer Acid. And you know, I'm friendly with both of them, but I haven't had the idea to come at to them with. But I think I could probably do something fun with using my neon flicker style with XCopy. I think that would lend itself well. And I think my psychedelic stuff would pair well with Killer Acid. And Killer Acid's the artist who I discovered NFTs through, because he was selling his stuff on Super Rare, and I'm a collector of his work from years ago.
I'll tell you what, it would be absolutely amazing, would not be able to afford it, but to see a Brian Brinkman XCopy collaboration. XCopy is very talented with his blinking, with what he does, and he has been around for a while. Ever since I first started at the, I think, years ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah, and we favor some of the same colors, I think. Mm-hmm. His pinks and greens are in line with me. So I think we have some similar sentiments.
I need to see like an XCopy Nimbud or something. Oh my goodness. That would be great. But no, so now that you've navigated the space, you've been in it for a while, I think we can all agree that this has been one of the most, I guess you would say, troubling times, bear markets that we've had. Are you worried at all? Are you just keeping it moving? I mean, like you said, you come from when there wasn't even a digital art scene for you to put, like, you know, you make a GIF, you can't put a GIF on a shirt, you know? So you,
well, when did you join the space?
Joined, I guess the best way to say is I faded BAYC at 0.5. So I was top shot first, then came over here.
Nice. So that would have been like January 2021.
I'd say about a couple weeks before Cool Cats launched.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you remember, about a year ago exactly, the market tanked as well. Mm-hmm. And there was all these articles that were like, NFTs are dead, blah blah blah. And so this is probably, I feel like, my third cycle. It always happens around this time of the year for some reason, and I could be totally wrong, but that's what it feels like, at least. That when I first joined, ETH was at like $250, and that crashed down to like 150, and I was like, oh no. And then a year later it was at 3,000 and went down to 1,000, and then this year it was at 4,000, went down to 2,000, you know. And so like, to me, it's just become something that doesn't really bother me as much, because I've been through it enough times. That those other couple times, yeah, I freaked out, because a year ago it crashed about a month after I quit my job at NBC. And I was like, oh no, did I just time this out really poorly? Because, you know, even my Nifty Gateway drop, which sold pretty well, didn't sell out right away. It was a first come, first serve. And it took like a month or two, because the whole market was just dead over the summer. The Nifty Gateway market kind of died after kind of like some of the celebrity drops that kind of soured people on it. And it took them like 6 months to recover on that. Now they're doing great again. But I think, to me, even right now, like crypto's down, but like projects are flying still. Like people are still collecting NFTs. I don't, even though I think people are kind of more negative right now, I still feel like we're in a way better place than we were a year ago. We're in a way, way better place than we were 2 years ago. So I'm still very optimistic. And I think what's going to happen is people just kind of adjust expectations. We're seeing a lot right now where people are squeezing 10,000 edition projects down to 4,000 or 5,000, which I think is healthier, you know?
No, I do like that. And something that I've noticed in this space a lot is the people that have been around longer are the ones that are always less worried. It's always, yeah. It's of course, always the newer people, because this is probably their first time having a bear market. This is their first time experiencing it. So it's not like someone that's like, yeah, you know, I've seen it go up, seen it go down, not once, not twice, but maybe even three times. And we have a lot of new people that joined the space over the last couple months to a year. So, I mean, it is a big thing. But yeah. I think it's a little comforting knowing that most of the people that I've talked to that have been around the same length as me or longer are very optimistic about the future and yeah. where they believe NFTs can go.
Yeah. No, I will say, I do think that this bear market could last a little longer than the other ones, but I also think the market is in a very different place than it was where the market crashed like 4 or 5 years ago, you know? So I think it'll be tough just because the whole economy is struggling right now. You know, unfortunately, you know, as much as we think crypto is going to be this like opposite thing of what the regular world is, it's still very much tied to it. And so, you know, the gas is crazy and wars are happening in the world and election season's happening. There's just a lot of uncertainty, and that kind of fear bleeds into everything else.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's what a lot of people have been saying a lot recently, is that, you know, you got to look past just crypto being down. It's not just crypto. There's a lot of things in the world that are down. There's a lot of things that are going on. And whenever you want to get things done, you know, real world doesn't, you don't think of an idea and have it made by Tuesday when you thought about it Monday. That might happen in the NFT space, but it just moves way quicker here, you know?
Yeah. So it's not like, you know, unfortunately, like my Netflix stocks aren't doing so hot, but you know, the people are going outside. They're not watching TV as much. There's just a lot of things that are kind of outside the control of other people. But I think what'll happen is the summer people log off a little more. Once September hits, election season gets over with, people are going to be inside, and I think things will pick back up. But I would always suggest people be safe, take profits when you can. You were talking about these communities coming and going right now. The problem is everyone wants to take profits because everyone's afraid. And so very few of these projects are going to continue to grow, because as soon as there's any sort of profit to be made, people will take it because people are desperate right now. And I can't fault them for that at all.
No, not at all. And it's, I heard you mention outside. So speaking of outside as well, how do you feel that these NFT events do for the space? Do you feel it's a positive impact, a negative impact, or do you feel like there's any, because you've been to the prior NFT NYC.
Mm-hmm. I went to Art Basel as well, and I went to NFT LA.
So you actually know what these events are like, what the market kind of does before, after. So what is not only a common misconception for these events, do you feel it's healthier or not for the space?
I think a misconception would be that people think that these events will pump their bags. I often don't see them doing that, but what they do is give you confidence in holding your bags. Because what you do is you go to a party and you go, this party is awesome. The people here are great. I want to continue to be a part of this community. And I think when, you know, these NFT events, they're a real mixture of art events and brand events and VC events and all sorts of stuff. And you get a sense of which of these events you enjoy being around. And that really helps you decide where you want to invest your money and time in this space in a lot of ways. And so, you know, some of the, you know, I don't want to say what parties I didn't enjoy, but some of the parties I did enjoy, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to continue to, I want to, you know, I want to buy a cool cat, so I can go to the cool cat party. You know, it's like, it's that kind of mentality. And so I do think that misconception is that, you know, the Bored Ape Fest, people might think, oh, that's going to pump up sales. Not really. But what's going to happen is you're going to have a great time and you're going to want to hold your ape another year for the next party, you know?
Absolutely. It does make you feel really strong in what you've, you know, whenever you're on the internet, you know, we all talk about being one big family, but whenever you're in person and you see that one big family, for example, I don't know if you know the project Crypto Ray Rays, but I've been,
I have one. Yeah.
Oh, let's go, dude. Let's go. So I've been a really big supporter over there and I believed in Dose. I bought 60. So,
oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but whenever I went to the event in LA, it made me confident on why I bought those 60. I was like, this is what I originally invested in. It makes me feel confident being a whale here. And I'm proud to say that. And that's what it's really about. I didn't really care if the floor went up because I was like, I'm still not going to sell because, you know, whenever it comes to NYC, we're going to have the same family again, so on and so forth. I really believe in NFT. So I feel like we're going to do this for years to come. But I do want to ask you, you know, you've been in the space for a while. How have you been? How has Brian Brinkman been? Are you liking NFT still? Are you enjoying yourself, man?
I love it. It's definitely changed, you know, where the space is at now versus when I started. When I started, it was a bunch of kind of dorky artists, like getting very excited about the fact that one, there was collectors of digital art. That was exciting. It was exciting that we were on the curve of technology that was still very much being built around what we wanted to see. Like the fact that I can jump on calls with Manifold or Super Rare or Nifty Gateway and give them advice on how to steer the platforms to make my life better is something that's extremely exciting and extremely powerful that I wouldn't have, you know, outside of this space. And so there's something really intimate and cool about that. But then, you know, as I've grown in this space, I've been put into a position where I have to be a little, I've always been, you know, I think fair and ethical, but I have to be even more fair and ethical now that I've grown to where, you know, if I tweet out, hey, I bought We're All Gonna Die, you guys should buy that or something, and then I go and sell it for profit, then people might come at me and be like, you pumped your bags, you know, all this stuff. And so I have to be much more like careful about the optics of participating in this space. I know a lot of people would work with like burner accounts or this like a non accounts or something, but like, I'm trying to be my best to be fair. And so, you know, but also, you know, I tried to be cautious about what I shared, what I tell people that I'm buying, because I've now at a point where people have like alerts set for my wallet because they think I make really smart choices. And honestly, I would say I'm like 20% right, but I'm buying into projects I like. And so I don't care as much if they like moon or not. And so I think that's, you know, that's something that has changed in that sense. And then, yeah, now I'm in a position where, I'm signed to, I'm not just doing art. I'm signed to a talent agency. So now I'm going to start to collaborate on bigger ideas. I'm an advisor on multiple projects, including a charity NFT platform that's about to launch, and a PFP project called BimToy, which has Tiny Ghost. And so like, I'm at a point now where, again, like I said in the beginning of this, I have crazy ADHD. And so I'm like, I want to do a million things at once and I get bored doing the same thing over and over. So if I can be a builder, if I can be an advisor, if I can be a collaborator, if I can be an artist, I want to do it all. And, you know, whether that burns me out, which it has at times, I'm being burned out doing stuff that I really enjoy. And so it's like, it's a catch 22 in that sense, because it's like, I wouldn't, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you need to hire more assistants and give them stuff to do and upload this stuff. It's like, I enjoy all this. I enjoy jumping on a podcast and talking with you. I enjoy being in DMs and alpha groups and chatting and having fun and making jokes. Like, this is all part of it to me. And, you know, the fact that I can now hold a career where I get to make art, make jokes on Twitter and go to events in the city and have drinks with cool people. It's like the dream come true in my mind. This is what it's all led to.
I mean, it's literally, whenever you put it like that, for some people, it's like, oh, that's too good to be true. But it's like, that's what we're trying to do with NFTs. Be the owner of your art, you know, being able to go, I can go do a 100-piece collection and put all the owners in a Twitter DM and we can just hang out, meet up somewhere, chill, relax. And you actually talked about the CAA signing, which I'm going to briefly ask you about. But whenever it came to, you know, you have these communities and stuff and the people watching your wallet, how does that make you feel now that people are more aware and on top of you? You know, you and other artists, you know, you have people like yourself, Gary V, people are always watching Gary V's wallet. Does it feel a little, does it make you want to like buy stuff differently, or do you still just carry on your day and, but let people know like, hey, I'm just, like you said, I'm just buying what I like. There's no real need to watch my wallet. I'm not really an NFT trader. I'm really an NFT buyer and art investor.
I think the difference between myself and some of the more, I would say, like influencers of the space is that as much as some, I would say there's a handful of people that might copy trade me, but I don't have the finger on the button that could like sell out a project if I wanted it to sell out in a way that like Farouk or Gary V or Kevin Rose could, you know what I mean? And so I don't think I've hit that level of like power. And once you do hit that level of power, I'm sure a lot of money gets thrown your way and it's easy to get tainted by selling out. But I've done my best to like not sell my tweets and like keep it honestly me. And if I'm sharing stuff, it's usually because I bought it or if it's artists I like, you know, I'm very cautious that I feel like I've reached this point by being honest in this space. And I know how quickly you can lose that trust. It only takes one mistake really. And you can lose that trust very quickly.
Yes. Especially in the NFT space, because your image is everything. Like, you know, we've seen people that do the rug pulls, false identities, and yeah, they may stick around, but the trust is never there like it once was. There's never that original feel that you had before pulling the curtain back. And it does suck to realize some people are not who they claim to be, but I do love that. And I really enjoy everything that I've ever seen you tweet about, post about. It's never been cringe-shilling or, you know, it's just your true feelings, like, or jokes or just how you feel or what you're doing at the time.
And even that's when what I do, even when I do like a collaboration with Genies or Budweiser, it's always like free. And so it's like, there's no risk. It's just fun. I think I think that's, it goes back to what the space is all about, which is just like pushing fun technology. And I think once you start to look at like how to maximize profits, you're losing really quickly.
I could agree there. And I wanted to speak on something that we talked about a couple minutes ago with the signing. So I did also want to congratulate you. I did on Twitter, but I have to, now that we're talking, congratulate you on signing with CAA, the agency. And I think I was looking through their list of people that they've signed. They're no joke, man. They got some heavy hitters on the team. They've done some serious things. What has it been like just to watch your life change as an artist? Because honestly, brother, I mean, you've been, like I said, a super positive person. You've been super humble about your work, and you're really uplifting to others from what I've seen. So I definitely see why they would pick someone great like yourself. But what has it been like just to keep evolving, keep going the next step? You know, you left NBC, I believe you said, and became fully Web3 now, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so you're fully Web3. You just got signed to CAA. What's it feeling like for you as an artist?
Feels like I have a lot of things to work on. Again, I create a lot of work for myself, and this just adds a lot more in a fun way. But what I think is interesting about the signing, one is that I'm out of a lot of the things they sign, I don't have a IP. I don't have a character yet or a world. So I'm very much building it from the ground up, whatever I do. Which is exciting because to me, well, I want to utilize the CAA and its resources to find ways of bringing more people into the space versus maximizing people I've already have as collectors within the space. Because that was kind of what went into the process of deciding that was, at a certain point, I've done very well within the space, but the space is kind of stagnating on growth. And so how do we bring more people in? And I can't do that by making more NFTs, but I can do that if I work with brands or something outside the space. And so I think there's something interesting there. And so what I'll end up doing with them is to be determined. There's a lot of, you know, I throw a lot of ideas out and we'll see what sticks. But it's very fun. And it's, you know, I mentioned earlier that I do everything myself. So it's nice now to have at least someone in my corner that's willing to like go to bat for me and set up a meeting or negotiate for me and things that I necessarily don't enjoy doing. So that's a good thing.
No, man, it's super awesome to see that you're always building, man. You've built something and you're continuing to build from the ground up. And like you said, whatever it may be, you're putting your all into it. And I mean, I feel like you've done it the correct way. You're not someone who goes out here and pays for influencers or, you know, have to buy the newest thing and tweet it out. And before going into the five questions that I ask everyone on the podcast, is there anything that you're working on that you haven't shared yet that you can talk about, or anything that you're excited for?
Because this is going to happen, I think, release maybe after NFT NYC, some of it will have already happened, but I have some things going on there that I'm excited about. So the Nifty Gateway will happen from then. I'm doing some stuff with Super Rare coming out later this year, some merchandise that I'm excited about. There's a possibility I'll do a follow-up to my Art Blocks project, but we'll see. Manny's a busy man. My collaborator is crushing it in the space. I got him involved with Nimbuds, and now he's one of the lead devs at Pixel Vault, and so I'm really proud of him. I feel like he's steering one of the biggest ships in the space right now. It's really cool. But in the same regard, we're both very busy. So that's kind of fun. We've been working on that for over a year now. We'll see if it ever materializes. I'm just probably going to be dropping stuff every week or two, little things here and there for fun. See how it goes.
So this is going to be probably a wild one, but is Manny the guy with the fro that was the lead artist over at SNL in the one video that was posted on YouTube?
That's him.
It's so wild. People listening are like, what are you talking about? But no, that was a super informative video that I had watched. I'm sure you know what video I'm referring to.
I think it's called the SNL visual effects making of or something like that. But yeah, we're both in that. The rest of the team, has grown a lot since then. Back then, I think there's four or five of us. Now there's like 12 people there. Even before a year ago, Manny and I got to work on the NFT parody sketch, and we got to put Nimbuds into that SNL NFT song that Pete Davidson rapped. And I got to put some of my Super Rare Nifty Gateway works in there. We got to make parodies of A Lot of Money and Beeple and all this stuff. It was great. And so I think that was after we'd already done Nimbuds. And so everyone at SNL had kind of already knew that me and Manny knew what an NFT was. So they kind of came to us for visual help.
Brian was early before early was early. I love hearing it. but I mean, that's crazy. And I honestly did not know Manny was over at Pixel Vault. A couple months ago, we did have Economist on the podcast. He's a great friend, and he's over at Pixel Vault now. Nice. As well. So I absolutely love PV and what they do. I think they are building something for the long term. That's been probably one of my favorite investments, Ready for the Sidekicks and stuff. But I know I said that was the last question, but is there anything you want to let people know, like anything we didn't touch on before moving to the five questions?
Nah, I think I'm okay.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
So starting off with the questions, they usually go, I say, a little hard to easier. But number one is always the hard hitting. What is the most important thing in Brian Brinkman's life?
I'll get sentimental. I'll say my wife, Ashley. If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't go downstairs and eat. I wouldn't go outside and walk. She's really good at keeping me from losing myself in the space.
No, I mean, that's beautiful. And everyone listening has to give a big shout out to Ashley and anyone encouraging their partners just to do what it takes just to be a good person and better them.
Yeah,
that's beautiful,
she,
man.
She encouraged me to go full time in the space. She's super, super supportive. She's the best. So.
Oh, let's go, man. We love a supportive spouse, man. I love it. I love it. So number two, this one might be a little bit harder for you, but what is an obstacle that you have overcame that has helped you get to where you are today, whether it be just in life, as an artist, NFTs, anything?
Even though I said it was a strength earlier, I would say the ADHD and like being able to manage my time and that, you know, that's something I used to be a lot worse at, and I've had to overcome it by you making lists and all these other things to like keep my mind focused, because I'll easily forget stuff. If people have DM'd me and I don't get back to them, it's because I've just my attention span and memory is terrible. But I think that's probably one of the hardest things. I still struggle with that, and it was one of those things when I left my day job that gave me a lot of regimen, where it was like, okay, here's my list of things I got to do today. And then not having that and having to do it myself has been a challenge that I'm still working on a year later, becoming your own boss and time manager and stuff like that. And so that's something I'm still working to overcome.
Well, hey man, you're doing a damn good job, because I'll tell you what, I messaged you, you hit me back, you remembered. And 3 o'clock on the dot, you DM me and was like, hey, can you send the invite link again? And I was like, wow, he really remembered, didn't even have to remind him. So no, you're working hard, man. I can tell.
Oh, thanks.
No problem, brother. No problem. So, I changed this question as of last week. And then I kind of realized as I just looked over at my other screen, not everyone goes camping. So when you leave the house to go, we'll say camping, or out to do something that's not just an everyday activity, what are at least two or three necessities that you must bring with you?
Well, my phone is usually, I don't know, I do pack pretty light these days. Probably a hat, especially when I go, my house, I live in the suburbs now, and there's like a forest park down the street that I walk around sometimes. But I got to wear a hat more so I don't get sunburned now that I have a growing bald spot. So that's something. And then, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I have a third thing. Keys sometimes, a garage door opener. No, I don't know. I haven't gone camping in so long, man. It's probably been like 20 years since I went camping. It's kind of wild.
20 years since camping. I mean, honestly, that's a long time. And that's why whenever I read the question, I was like, you know what? I don't think people go camping as often as I think they do.
I would probably bring a sketchbook or like an iPad so I could draw. Usually like what the equivalent of that would have been when I lived in the city, there was days where I would be on like hiatus or whatever. And I would go venture off to Central Park, and I would bring a sketchbook. I'd probably bring, a joint or something. I would just wander around the city and draw and just hang and relax. But that's probably the closest thing to like going on a camping trip.
Okay. Well, I'm just the idiot who changed the question, to camping. I definitely will be switching that back after this week. But no, I like your answer. So this one might be a little funny. What is one thing that you're dying to do before you get too old?
Oh, that's a good question. Before I get too old, what are things that you can't do when you get old? That's the question.
Skydiving?
Oh, no, I'm afraid of heights.
You're afraid of heights?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
I like roller coasters.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't like edges of buildings.
Drift. Okay. Yeah. So
drift stuff makes me sweat. I don't know. That's a good question. There is one of those indoor skydiving things near me. I could try that. Things to try.
Or is there anything that you've been dying to do now that you just haven't got the time to do it or something?
Hmm. Gosh, it's a good question. I wanna no, I don't know. Oh, geez. You stumped me on this one. I need better goals in life. Yeah, I don't know. I think I would like to. Go visit some place interesting. That's a terrible answer.
Oh my God, I like that.
Oh,
Go
man.
visit someplace interesting.
Yeah, go to Canada. I've never been to Canada. That's on my list of things to do before I get old.
Okay, we'll take it. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that answer at all.
It's terrible.
Go visit someplace interesting.
Yeah, I'm a boring man.
And then followed it with Canada.
Yeah.
I love it. So the last one, I'm really interested to see what you'll do here, especially in a bear market. If I gave you 200 ether and it had to be spent on NFTs only, and you had to get the total as close as you could to zero, what are some big purchases, plays, or investments that you would make right now? And if you can't speak on projects for any reason, just say a bunch of NIMBYs or something.
Yeah, no, I'd probably buy a couple of the art blocks pieces that I don't have that are pricey, like Archetype. I would probably, I'd probably buy CryptoPunk. I've always wanted one of those. Those two things probably get me up to like 75 ETH.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. And then maybe I'd buy back my Fidenza I sold. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think I would like access to some of those cool projects. Moonbird, it's like, again, what projects have cool communities that I want to be in? Moonbirds is one. I think CloneX seems like a cool community. But what I would probably do is just go crazy on like Foundation and Super Rare and try and buy like 50 to 100 pieces for one ETH each, and just make a bunch of small bets on artists that are kind of new in the space and buy a whole bunch of Genesis pieces, because that would be much more rewarding to share and elevate than to like just have a Moonbird,
Honestly, that's a really good answer, and I should expect that more from artists, not only because you, I would imagine as an artist, you know more artists and you've seen a lot more work than people who are just now getting into NFTs. So you could go through and make a lot of one ETH investments. And I never thought about just banking on a lot of people early as your 200. That's
Yeah,
a really
it's
good
a
idea.
risk. I mean, it's a is it a, I don't know if it's more risky than betting on a single like expensive like a Bored Ape or something.
Or not if you
Because
like the art and you're just
well,
investing.
if you like the art, the other thing is you, especially if I'm a big believer in if you can buy art from artists directly, you're funding them to keep creating for a certain amount of time. And so, when you collect that kind of stuff, you're creating your own success as a collector because you're encouraging them to grow. And so I think that's I still do that to a degree, but I can only afford to buy like one, 2 to 3 ETH piece every month or two, I just don't have that kind of liquidity all the time. But I think it'd be a fun thing, especially right now. Right now, I think a lot of artists are selling stuff. It steals because the market's dead for art right now. And so I think there's a lot of possibilities. I bought two pieces from Pino on Foundation for what feels like nothing compared to like how amazing he is as an artist. And it's like those are just steals that no one's paying attention to right now. But I think, as an artist, I have, an education in art history to a degree, and I've been in the space and I'm social media aware, so I can go look up the artists and see how they create their work and what the value is. And so I feel like artists, especially in this space, have a bit of a cheat code when it comes to investing in art because you can make a lot of educated guesses on which artists will continue to grow.
Exactly. Yeah, that's how I feel. And I'll tell you someone else that I think has been, I would like to catch a piece now that they're lower than they have been in the past is Pop Wonder. I don't know if you've ever worked with Pop Wonder, but that would also be a sick person.
That would be sick. Yeah. No, he was, he, I think we have both collected each other's Nifty Gateway pieces at this point. He's awesome. I love his work, and he's a really down to earth guy. I've chatted with him before. So yeah, no, I think he's definitely on that kind of same colorful psychedelic pop spectrum.
Yeah. That's what kind of art I really enjoy. The Keith Haring, really colorful art, bold lines, but just super simplistic as well. That's why I would, if I had to pick, I'd go Ape over Mutant, because there's just so much going on with the Mutants. I just couldn't look at that all day. Yeah. But just stuff like that. But Brian, that was the five questions.
Thanks.
And truthfully, that was the whole podcast. So if I missed anything, or if there was anything that you did want to speak on that I didn't give you the chance to, by all means, this is your floor right now to school me right now and say, hey, you forgot this.
I don't think there's anything you forgot. There's a million things that I could talk about, but it's all, you know, I would say anybody that's listening, thank you for making it this far. Feel free to follow me, Brian Brinkman, Brian with a Y, on Twitter, and have a Discord. You're welcome to join. It's full of wonderful collectors and non-collectors, and it's a great place to hang out and just chat. But yeah, no, I really appreciate you having me on, Sniper.
No, dude, I told you, whenever you replied to me and you were like, yeah, man, I'd totally be down whenever I'm free, we circled back, we made it happen, I was ecstatic. You know, and I didn't mention this heavy throughout the episode, but I mean, you even have two Emmys. You know, you're very talented, Brian. And
thank you.
You're someone
in the space. Now I got to correct you, because I actually have four.
Oh, shit.
No, I'm sorry. The benefit of working on SNL is it wins the Emmy every year. And so you're pretty guaranteed an Emmy for working there. Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, no, it's, I had them framed above my desk, and the frame fell on the floor and shattered. And so now I need to figure out what to do with them.
Oh no. Okay.
It's okay.
See, I don't have that problem personally, because I got zero Grammys.
I should put them up on the shelf above my shoulder here.
Or I'm like surprised you don't have them
on this like thing here, and then I can flex it on my Zoom calls.
I mean, whenever we're done with this, I'm going to turn on my camera so you can see, my trophies behind me. You're going to get a good laugh out of that, but thank you so much, man, for actually setting aside the time to come on here, talk to everyone that, like you said, hopefully listened all the way through, cause this was a very great podcast. I mean, very great episode, but, yeah, man, thank you so much. And for the listeners out there, I do encourage you to go check out Brian on Twitter. He's a very funny individual. Like I've said tons of times in that episode, he's a very great guy, very nice, very informative whenever he is talking NFTs and not joking around on the TL. But I get a laugh every day out of him. So I do encourage everyone. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Brother. Thank you to everyone that's listening. We will see you next Monday, whenever this airs, either the 20th or 27th, but regardless, we'll keep pushing them out, and I hope everyone has a great day. Peace out, and see y'all next week.